Nine True Summers of the Yes Music Podcast.
Produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall, this is Yes Music Podcast episode 450. Video killed the Yes Music. Or did it?
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 450 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a little bit. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. Is or was Yes a promotional video type band? This is the question Mark and I wrestle with this week. We each chose three videos to discuss and also broadened our scope a bit as well. Stay tuned for that a bit later on, and do watch the videos which I've embedded into the show notes for this episode to give you some context. In the past week, on those social webs, and starting with the YMP Facebook page, Doug Curran spotted that Cherry Red Records announced the release of what they call a remastered and expanded version of John Anderson's second solo album, Song of Seven. Expanded actually means two additional songs: Summer Born, US single promo edited version, and Heart of the Matter short version. Dave Watkinson showed off a collection of Yes badges, or buttons if you're in North America, all featuring the Roger Dean Yes logo, and there are only six orange vinyl versions of Dave's John Anderson and the Warriors Lost Demos EP remaining. Well, they may have been sold by now, so get in fast if you can. Fernando Anaya Villegas, I hope that's correct, posted Yes's appearance on Letterman in 1994 or 5 playing Walls. It's rather good, and does appear to be entirely live, with Billy Sherwood in the Yes Choir, as well as strumming an acoustic guitar, and the Letterman House Band also joining in, I think. Brian Neeson added a photo of him in Japan last year with a friend called Shoji, as well as Alan White and Tony Kaye. And Daniel Crone posted his review of White's Origins album, which he likes. And incidentally, stay tuned for something to do with White very soon on the YMP. Preston Frazier tackles Release Release from Tormato, which he calls a fine train wreck. Cheek. In the community posts, here's Jeffrey Mason's Treasure Trove this week, a review of The Red Planet by Rick Wakeman, another one of those list things, this time it's 25 greatest prog albums of all time, and at least I've got the correct band at number one, even if it's the wrong album. A collection of brilliant photographs taken by Joe Sear of Yes in concert during their 1976 solo albums tour. A Rick Wakeman interview in Italian. A John Anderson interview from Goldmine. Darren Locke reviewing the blue vinyl version of Yes's From a Page. Badfinger teaming up with Rick Wakeman for a version of Paul McCartney's Come and Get It, which is very enjoyable. A happy birthday wish to Tormato. And 1972 photos of Yes in Amsterdam by Charles Stridge. No idea if that's the correct pronunciation. Amazing collection, as usual, Jeffrey. In addition, Adrian Bell tells us his latest progressive alternative includes lots of music from Yes solo artists, and Charles Christopher spotted that National Public Radio's Sound Opinions show did an episode recently on Going for the One, complete with the John Anderson interview. Dave Watkinson posted something else from his personal collection. This time it's a photo of the bass maestro himself, Chris Squire, and Doug Curran joined in the Tormato festivities with a photo of his copy, signed by the whole band. He says, "I played the entire album on my radio show when it was released. Those were the days. The album may have mixed reviews, but it was very popular at the time, and the tour, with 101 concerts presented in the round, was hugely successful. I saw four shows and interviewed the band on tour for the fourth consecutive year." Hooray! On Twitter, Kenny Brown was very kind in recommending the YMP, and I posted a fairly random collection of Yes CD singles and special editions. And speaking of special editions, you may have noticed a new jingle from bass legend Miguel Falcao. Thank you so much to him for that. And thank you to everyone who has been in touch in any way this week, including the commenters on last week's show notes, Ian MB, Doug Curran and Peter Saint-André.
This is Miguel Falcão at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Last week, Mark and I realised we haven't talked about Yes promotional videos for a long time. So this week, we have chosen three each to talk about. These are not necessarily our favourites, but each one has unique features worth some discussion. First of all, I've chosen Madrigal from Tomato. Quite why there is a promotional video for this song at all is a puzzle. It wasn't a single from the album, nor even a B-side. As we shall see, quite a bit of work was put into it, and it's very definitely meant to be a promotional film. But before appearing on the compilation Yes Greatest Video Hits in 1992, had it ever been seen before? If you have some information on this, I'd love to know. You probably already know that Madrigal is a short song, and this video doesn't extend it a lot, but it does feature some remarkable visuals. Never one to shy away from a bit of pantomime, Rick Wakeman is dressed as an 18th century, probably, musician, all lace collars and tailcoat, as he walks to a harpsichord in an appropriately dramatic drawing room. The audience are heard talking quietly, and Rick is taking it all very seriously indeed. He's clearly from the school of deadpan acting, popularised later by stars such as David Duchovny. This was 1978, so we aren't too surprised to see John Anderson's face superimposed inside the keyboards of Wakeman's harpsichord, and then Anderson and Howe floating out of the window behind Rick. It tends to depend what kind of mood I'm in as to how I react to this video. Today, as Chris Squire appeared behind John Anderson to add some backing vocals next to an upturned keyboard, I have to admit I did laugh out loud. There's a zoom into the sound hole of the harpsichord, which then reveals Steve Howe playing his Spanish guitar. And then Anderson, Squire and Howe sit in a row on high stools, recalling for me the cosy noodlings of the great 70s entertainer and doyen of the Cardigan, Val Doonigan. Alan White does get to appear, despite adding very little to the song itself. I'm not 100% sure he's on there at all, but he is shown adding some cymbals, and Wakeman's hands are seen in something like Gulliver's Lilliput experience with the other musicians tiny and seemingly contained inside his harpsichord. Rick receives a little, fairly half-hearted applause, and the hand of one of the audience is revealed as fake crowd noise is added. Finally, we are left with a shot of a Roger Dean Yes logo ring, which appears to be studded with diamonds. Anyone know where this is now? Should be worth a king's ransom. Well, so it's a very odd, but definitely not unenjoyable promotional video. It's clearly meant to be humorous, and the editing and compositing are fairly good for the time. A great little Yes curio. Now we fast forward, not a great deal in terms of time, but rather a long way in terms of style, to 1984, and Hold On from the 9012 live concert film. This is included in Yes Official's YouTube channel as an official music video, so as always, it could be said I'm bending the rules slightly. Anyway, it's a perfect opportunity to watch a song from one of my all-time favourite music films. This is a live video of the band recorded at Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, on the 28th and 29th of September 1984, mixed with Charlex computer special effects, which were the most modern techniques available at the time. And they use some archive feature film footage. It is also noticeable as the directorial debut of Steven Soderbergh, for which he received a Grammy Award nomination for Best Music Video Long Form in 1985. In case you were wondering, probably his most well-known feature film work has been the Oceans trilogy, which featured pretty much all the Hollywood A-listers you can think of. For me, this is a scintillating video which I first saw not on MTV, where it was used as a promotional aid for the slightly odd 9012 Live The Solos album, but on Channel 4, the groundbreaking outlet which also promoted the work of Trevor Horn, amongst many others, on shows like The Tube, where Jules Holland, formerly keyboard player of Squeeze, introduced Horn-produced acts like Frankie Goes to Hollywood and ABC, and they played live. Sadly not Yes, however. 9012 Live cemented my devotion to Yes after I discovered the band via the loan of that infamous cassette tape from my friend. You know, the one containing 90125 and Tomato. But what of this video for Hold On? Somehow the direction manages to make the crowd look like the largest ever seen on TV, and Alan White is highlighted playing his bombastic drum introduction, while John Anderson introduces him by name. Then Raven and the rest pile in. The visuals are a wonderful combination of 80s stage fashion and dramatically spinning and colourful visual effects. I absolutely love the chance to see the musicians clearly having an absolute ball. Squire dances around and Kay jumps behind his minimalist keyboard setup. No sign of Casey, though. Personally, I've always loved the Monty Python, Terry Gilliam-like visual effects, but I know they aren't everyone's cup of tea, and you do have the option on the DVD release to watch the film without them. The energy and sense of fun flows out of the band powerfully, and you can see why the tour was so well received. It's fabulous stuff with Rabin guitar heroics and lots of brilliant harmony singing by him, Squire and Anderson. Yes, the costumes look bizarre if you didn't experience the 1980s, but who could resist the fake jousting between Squire and Rabin as they writhe in each other's faces? Squire actually has his leg in between Rabin's at one point, and the performance is, of course, just stunning. One of my favourite aspects is the crowd-pleasing definitive end, which is held up in deliberately dramatic fashion while we get to hear Squire's venue-filling bass pedal and see him playing with the audience. Wow, what an absolute blast. Finally, I've chosen to return to my first love, Tomato, and its single, if you don't count Release, Release, which was only released in Canada and which had the rest of the world's single on its B-side, Don't Kill the Whale. This is certainly recorded using the same equipment as Madrigal and uses some of the same vision mixing techniques. We start with a view of the sea and two dark shapes are moving off in the distance on the horizon. Are they whales? It's really not clear. As Steve Howe's fabulous solo reaches its high point and the weird rasping and warping bass beneath, the band are revealed as if getting their feet wet in the sea. John Anderson is sporting some large shades, and footage of whales' tails plays semi-transparently through the figures of the musicians. Essentially, it's a watery performance video, and at least Alan White gets to thump some flange-bottomed tubs this time. Waves crash, and Rick's fingers are seen presumably on that mythical Birotron. That's a bit of a treat, if nothing else. The effect of hiding the feet, and even sometimes the complete lower halves of the musicians in the water, is slightly odd. But it's an effective video. A bit of fun.
Greetings, friends. So this week, Kevin and I have decided to do a rather fun episode in which we take a look at three Yes music videos. Now, they don't necessarily have to be our favorite ones or our least favorite ones. Just videos, I guess, that either interest us or amuse us, or hopefully we don't choose the same ones. But hey, with the amount of videos that Yes have, it might happen and we might. So with that in mind first, let me just start by saying that there really isn't a whole hell of a lot of music videos done by Yes. When you consider how long Yes have been a band, I mean, we're talking 50 years here, and I'd be surprised if there's more than 40. And that may sound like a lot of videos, but really in that time period, I would expect maybe more. Now, I find the whole thing about music videos kind of funny because Steve Howe once was quoted as saying that he never looked at Yes as being a band that did music videos. Whenever there was a music video, he just kind of imagined it as a situation where they were just kind of standing in one place and playing their instruments, and that was about the extent of it. I think this was around the time when Owner of a Lonely Heart came out as a video, because he was, I guess, flabbergasted at the fact that they actually went out and did a full-on production video for a song. And that's where I'm going to start with my three selections. Owner of a Lonely Heart, the actual MTV video version of it. Now, why I bring this up is because, much to my horror and to many Yes fans' horror, there is another version of this song in video form, and us Yes fans don't really speak of it. It is that terrible. Believe me, you don't want to look it up and watch it. Why they're on some sort of a sandy beach by a beach house or something like that is really beyond me, why they did this sort of video. But the actual video that was done, in my opinion, is fantastic. I remember the very first time I saw the video for Owner of a Lonely Heart. I was kind of young at that time. I think I was maybe like 12, or that would have been 83. Yeah, so I would have been... No, I would have been, it came in 83, I would have been 10, but I don't think I saw it when it actually came out, probably like a year later, so maybe like 11 or so. So yeah, it still kind of took me by surprise, the video with all these snakes and maggots in the sink and stuff like that. And if I remember correctly, in Canada here, we have Much Music. I think they actually did do a sort of altered version of the video. There was a censored version of it because I think they actually got complaints about it from some, you know, mothers and stuff like that, who deemed the video too scary for young Johnny's eyes to witness. But, you know, it is a good video. I mean, looking back at it now, a lot of videos from that time period are really embarrassing for a lot of bands, you know, bad clothing, some of them wearing a lot of makeup and stuff like that. But this video is actually very well done. I mean, it kind of stands the test of time, in my opinion, and that's very rare to say about any anything from 1983. And the funny thing is, you do have Yes in it, but very minimally, more towards the end of the video where they kind of all show up on the top of a building and they kind of show their alter egos. Like, one of them is a hawk, one of them is a snake, one of them is a cat. It was a very interesting sort of concept. So that's one of the very first videos that came into my mind when Kevin and I were talking about what topic to do this week. Now, I'm very curious to see if Kevin also selected this one, because it is one that I think that most Yes fans would probably jump to first as an example of a Yes video. So now the second video that I selected is one that maybe I selected because last week we discussed Yes versus Time and a Word, the albums. One of the songs that came into my mind for this was Astral Traveler. And yes, there is a video for this song. And this is one of those examples of videos that Yes did that kind of make me scratch my head and wonder, where are they going with some of these video images and what's the concept of this? Now, okay, Astral Traveler, I understand it'll be based around travel, which would explain the airplane coming into the gate at the airport, you know, landing and coming into the gate to offload the people. So I can understand that sort of imagery. But then there's other sorts of imagery that sort of makes me wonder. For example, the man in the hat walking down the railway tracks there. Now, train is a form of traveler, but certainly not an astral sort of travel. Not too sure about that imagery. Now, we have the necessary live performance aspect where they're all in a sort of empty room somewhere playing, looking very, I guess, hip for the time period. John Anderson strumming his classical guitar and Bill, you know, happily hitting his snare drum away, because it is a sort of marching beat in this song. But it is a sort of, I guess, necessary component for these types of videos. Again, one of the other things I find interesting is the sort of production that they thought was very hip, I think, back then, where they had those quick zoom in, zoom out parts. And the part that I always find humorous is the close-ups on the faces during the chorus. They all look very uncomfortable during those parts singing the chorus. And the other part that makes me crack up all the time is the one time in the song where they do the disappearing act. The band is there, the band is not there, but the instruments are there sort of scene. I find that really tacky, but it is sort of funny. But Astral Traveler as a song is fantastic. So the fact that they have a video for it, I think not only shows that they believed in the song, but they felt that maybe making a video would even, you know, give it that much more of a push. Now, the part that I find very well done is when they do the breakdown part, where they do the actual instrumental section in the middle. Now, being a musician, I always find this sort of footage very interesting to see how they perform the parts as a group. Chris Squire humorously sort of punctuating those bass notes, and the close-up on Tony Kaye during the Hammond organ parts are fantastic. But when I see Steve Howe playing this, it looks pretty accurate, but I'm always kind of curious if he's actually playing what Peter Banks played on the album, or if he's just sort of fiddling around in the right area on the neck and doing his own sort of thing, because as we know, obviously, they're not doing live audio of them performing the song. So what Steve Howe is playing may or may not be what Peter Banks played, but that's really irrelevant. This is a video made to just promote the song in general. So Astral Traveler is a sort of interesting song to make a video, and I think that while it's not the worst video in the world, this one could have been done a lot better. So the last video I'm going to pick is Into the Lens. Now, at this point of Yes's career, they decided to make some music videos very wisely, I think, because at this time they had gotten in two new members, Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes. And I think one of the best ways to try to get a new audience base, or maybe even to expand an audience base, is to make a music video. And this video shows what I think Yes does very well, which is live performance. In fact, I will go as far as to say that is their strength overall as a band, is their live performance. So to show them in a live environment playing a strong song like this, I think is a great idea. What I love about it, though, is they really go into detail showing the different kind of keyboards that Jeff used in the song when he did those little vocoder parts, or his piano work. It also showed an emphasis on Steve Howe when he was using the lap steel, or when he used the sitar for those couple of notes in between. And you can't help but also be amazed by the sunglasses that Chris Squire was wearing at this point as well. Very fashionable. I'm saying that with a bit of sarcasm. And Trevor Horn looking, you know, every part the front man at this time. And Alan White with his fantastic headband. Yeah, of course, I'm knocking a little bit the band at this point. But, you know, it is the 80s, 1980, in fact. So you would probably expect these sort of fashion faux pas popping up during this time. But the song is fantastic, as we all know. I've always said that Drama is one of these records that I find very interesting, a record that was not embraced by the Yes fans immediately when it came out. And only years and years later, I think, I'll go as far as to say that I think when Benoit David joined the band, did this album finally get the recognition and credit that it deserved, because they started playing material from this. And for longtime Yes fans, it was almost like hearing new songs live again, because a lot of the fans had not heard this stuff live. There was only one tour proper that they played some of the songs, and that was it. So now they had a chance to hear these songs in a live environment, and I think the fans were very happy about it, and it propelled this album into higher rankings for a lot of people in their top 20 or 10 or whatever. And for me, certainly, it's easily in my top 10. But this video, I think, did its job in a lot of ways. Like I said, I like these sort of performance videos. And if you're going to do a performance video, then this is the kind of one I really enjoy. Focus on the players. Focus on what they're doing. Zoom in on the parts that are impressive or the parts that are important in the song. And I think it'll be that much more of an enjoyable watch for the person, especially if you're a musician. That's no doubt in my mind. So those are my three songs I've selected. I'm curious to see what Kevin has selected, and then we'll chat about it further right now.
So we've really enjoyed looking at some promotional videos from Yes this week and selecting some to talk about. And Mark's with me now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing very good. We're having an Indian summer here. A second wave of summer has hit us.
Nice. We had a little mini one of those, but it's gone away now. And it's pretty blustery. And we had hailstones today. But anyway, that's the that's the IMP weather forecast across the globe, as always. But back to videos. So, Mark, when you think of Yes, do you think of them as a band who produce promotional videos?
Absolutely not. Mm. I think of them as mainly a live band, because that's mainly what they've been known as throughout their career, especially now. I mean, we've seen numerous tours. I mean, tours that really didn't even support any new material. It was just like supporting older material and stuff like that. But they're definitely a touring band, not really a video band.
So, second question from that point of view then, what bands do you think of when you think of promotional videos? Which ones are the first couple that spring to mind?
Oh, and people are going to probably laugh at me when I say this, but like bands like Whitesnake and, you know, like bands that are like, you know, Guns N' Roses that spent $3 million on a video, you know. I mean, if you look at some of their videos that they've done, I mean, they hire like helicopters, renting a full, like, you know, 100 floor buildings in downtown Chicago and Los Angeles. Like, they really go all out on their stuff. Whereas, you know, when you see some of the Yes ones, I mean, they probably spent a grand total of, you know, $1,000 to secure one little warehouse or something to film in and then do some exterior shots, you know?
Yeah. It's certainly not one of their priorities. I do love the ones that Queen produced for the Works album in 1984. Those ones like the Want to Break Free, where they all dressed up famously as housewives, trying to bring to mind the Coronation Street, the great soap opera over here, and Radio Gaga. You think of that one where they used some of the clips from Metropolis, the film, and It's a Hard Life, which was just so over the top in terms of the costumes and staging of that. So yes, we don't get that kind of thing from Yes particularly, but we do get some very interesting things, and hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us talking about six videos this time. So, next question for you, Mark. What do you actually want from a promotional video? If you could choose, if you could direct, not Yes particularly, but generally a band video for one of your songs perhaps, what sort of thing would you go for?
I'm more of a kind of storyboard video guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a lot of people like the live performance videos and stuff like that, and those are really, you know, cool and stuff like that. But if a song has a good lyric to it, and it has a good story behind it, then I like seeing videos that actually play out the story in the video. Yeah. I think those are always the ones that I kind of like enjoy watching myself.
Yeah, so I mean, if we're thinking about Yes, then I suppose the two that spring to mind there are Owner, which you spoke about this week, and also Fly From Here. Now, that was quite dramatically done, wasn't it? They had the story of the pilot going up and then almost crashing and all those sorts of things. So yes, there are a couple from that point of view, yes. And I was just thinking myself about the different types of videos, as I think we may have spoken about before. There's the band playing ones, and you said some interesting things about that. The story ones you've just mentioned, ones with which really depend on visual effects. The lyric videos, which I think are relatively recent, certainly, though you see a lot of those on YouTube, and for Heaven and Earth, there were several released by Yes in that fashion, after that fashion. And there are those with which have nothing to do with the band at all, like the sort of reflective landscape type ones that you sometimes get people putting the music to themselves. And, of course, there are performance with added visual and nowadays digital effects, like the ones that John Anderson has been doing very recently for his Thousand Hands Part 1 album. So there's quite a lot of variation there. And that is one of the nice things. We've got 50 years of Yes history to go back and look at all the different types of things. And certainly in our selections, we came up with some very, very different videos. So, yes, owner. And I'm glad you mentioned the alternative owner video, which didn't get played as much on MTV. Did it get played at all on MTV? I'm not sure. It's a very sort of cheesy, funny video, the other one, isn't it? Is that the one where they end up on the beach around a campfire? Is that the one?
That's a level fine.
Oh, right.
You really are pleased that I mentioned that one.
I think I kind of
mentioned that, you know, us Yes fans, we don't really speak of that video, you know. It's a very hidden thing that we like to keep under wraps with the general public, that we deny it. Like, no, what other video? There's only that really cool one that they did. Because honestly, the very first time I saw that, I thought to myself, this has to be a joke. There's no way that they actually put like record company money behind this to fund this abomination of a video. I mean, John Anderson looked like he couldn't even keep a straight face through most of it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's really odd. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you really want to go back and watch that one again. And quite a few people, of course, don't know that it exists. And yeah, that's probably a better idea, as you say. But going back to Owner, very interesting one, filmed all around London and further afield, and starting off as a standard performance video and then changes dramatically, as you pointed out, in terms of the animals and some of those quite scary animals. As you said, it was censored. Nowadays, looking at the kind of stuff that they have on pop videos these days, it doesn't exactly seem too extreme, Owner of a Lonely Heart. But it was, I agree with you, actually rather well done. And there were some pretty embarrassing things about the one we've just spoken about, but also about, you know, even the three that I've chosen, Don't Kill the Whale, Madrigal, and even Hold On has got some pretty terrible fashions in it. So, but yes, you're right. The Owner really stands the test of time. And I wonder if that's down to the direction and just the way it was done. A really, really well-conceived video, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it honestly looks like they went and put some real thought into it. It looks like they used, like, you know, like proper film stock, like almost like motion picture type quality of this stuff, you know? Mm. I mean, when I first saw the video the first time, I remember thinking to myself, oh, this is cool. You know, they had like a performance part of it. And then when they kind of did that whole thing where it's like, hang on.
Yes.
Maybe there's another way we can do it. Like, when that happened at first, I was like, well, what is going on here? And then they redid the video again. And then I was like, I was hooked right in, because then it was exactly the kind of thing like I liked, like that kind of whole, you know, storyboard thing behind it. There was actually some thought to it. And I remember when I was younger, Kevin, that part where the guy started washing his face with the maggots, I was like, whoa, that really freaked me out the first time.
Yeah.
And I remember that after that, they never started showing that part. There was like some sort of edit that they did to it where it was either, I think they just either put another scene in or something, but here in Canada, they were really getting bombarded, I heard, about that. They were saying it was too much for children to see and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah. Well, fascinating, isn't it, that what Britain can cope with, it seems. You know, if you think about as I was talking about last time, the front cover of Time and a Word, which was censored across that side of the Atlantic. Very interesting indeed. And of course, this video, owner video, so well done and actually responsible for a certain amount of success of the song and the album and maybe even the tour. People seeing them on this video and then really wanting to go and see them live, and even the longevity of the band itself. You know, if we hadn't had the owner video, would we have Yesterday?
Yeah, I think the album and the video really cemented Yes in for the long haul. I think that they owe a lot to that record and to the videos themselves, because like the album, if you think about it, sounds just as good now as it did back then. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's one of those records that has held up very well. And that video has held up incredibly well, I think. Mm. I mean, you could put that video on now and release it like tomorrow and say that this is done, you know, yesterday, and people would probably believe it because it's really well done. There's not a lot of stuff in there that you can date back to 1983, I don't think. I mean, that's the thing I like about it, you know?
Yeah.
It's very non-dateable in that sense. I mean, that's one of those things I don't like about some of these other videos. You know, you can just tell by the clothing or some of the things that are in there. Like, you know, if someone's wearing like, you know, parachute pants or something, then you know, oh, they're watching an 80s video, or somebody has like, you know, certain bracelets on their wrist. You know, oh, that's, you know, there's a certain telltales, but they're not on this video. It's really well done. And I think it definitely propelled the album and Yes in general forward.
Absolutely. And I think one of the just final word on it, one of the correct decisions was to make the main character in the video, who isn't, as you say, isn't one of the members of the band. They're kind of enigmatic characters commenting on the what's going on and turning into animals and flying and all sorts of things, but the main character is actually a proper actor. You can look him up and he's done all sorts of things. So I think that was an excellent decision as well. But let's carry on. We could talk all day about that one, but let's go on to your second one, which is Astral Traveller, which is an interesting one as well. Now, of course, with all these, there are several, aren't they, of Time and a Word promo videos out there, some of them rather more bizarre than others. And there's this elephant in the room, isn't there? So we didn't mention it when we talked about Owner, but of course, if you look very, very closely at the final version of the Owner video, then you'll see Eddie Jobson just for a fleeting second, and rather less fleeting in all these Time and Word promo videos is Steve Howe. Now, of course, the reason this happened is because he joined the band very soon after the album was created. They hadn't made these promo videos at that stage, and Peter Banks had gone. And I was very interested in your comment. And one of the things that used to annoy me intensely was, particularly on Top of the Pops, that weekly programme that we had here in the UK, watching people mime to their records. And it really used to annoy me when they didn't take the trouble to mime anything like what the was on the record. And particularly as the 80s went on, it used to annoy me even more when they, you know, had someone on the stage strumming an acoustic guitar, for example, and there was clearly no acoustic guitar on the record at all. It used to just drive me bonkers, but anyway, that's besides the point. But yeah, so Steve Howe turns up in Yes, it's his dream job, I suppose, I'm sure it was, and finds himself doing these not just photo shoots, like for the front cover, the American front cover of Time and a Word, as we've said, but also full-blown promotional videos where he has to pretend that he's the guitarist. Bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a situation that he didn't want to get into, but realized that, you know, being in this band, it was something that he's going to have to do. Because, I mean, I did quote it in my piece there as well, that he did say in that documentary that he always thought of Yes as, you know, not being actors, you know, like he was so shocked when he saw like, you know, Owner of a Lonely Heart, like they were turning into, you know, proper actors, and like he was so surprised by the whole thing. And he said that Yes always, you know, in their old videos just used to just stand there and just playing their instruments looking rather coy, right? But, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I think Owner did so good, is because it was a more step in the proper direction. But back here in this thing, you know, he kind of had to step in and do it, because I guess the videos were kind of helping propel the album that wasn't exactly selling, you know, hot off the shelves, right, at that time. But it's funny watching it, because you can tell that they very much are not very comfortable in that role, especially Steve Howe.
Yeah, Yeah. He does get into the famous chase one where they're chased by a nun. You can tell he's enjoying that a bit more. And isn't that the same one where they have some kind of a beach buggy that they're travelling around the streets in this car, and they're sort of swapping places to drive and then to be in the passenger seat, etc., and all being very, very dangerous.
I think there was no opportunity necessary.
Yeah. So you know, he seemed to be enjoying himself there, but with this one, though, you're right. Now, the airport stuff at the beginning, though, the footage, fantastic documentary footage of the band going on tour, and obviously really going on tour, that was actual documentary footage. Perhaps it would have been better just to have that. I would have quite enjoyed watching watching them, you know, backstage on tour or whatever for the whole of that that video.
Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, though, that part probably made the most sense. I mean, as far as astral traveler goes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like I said before, like a train is not really an astral traveling vehicle.
No. Nope.
Right? But, you know, and, you know, I understand the performance end of it. They had to do something in there because he didn't have probably enough other footage to pad out the video. But, you know, yeah, I agree with you. If they would have maybe stuck along those lines of maybe showing them, you know, traveling from city to city or, you know, the whole offloading of their, you know what I mean? Like if they would have showed like the whole airplane segment, like getting on, getting off, getting their gear on and off, like that would have maybe at least made the astral traveler theme seem a little bit more relevant. Mm. I don't know. Like it just seems kind of odd that, you know, they have such a strong themed song lyrically, but didn't capitalize on it.
No, they didn't. And it'd be fascinating to know whose idea that was. Perhaps someone listening can tell us. But let's fast forward to Into the Lens, a different decade, the 80s. And I've said before, I've always liked these performance. They're very simple performance videos. But, you know, as you've said, yes, a live band is one of their massive strengths. And like you, I love seeing, even if they're not quite what's happening on the record, I do love seeing those performances and looking to see what the different members of the band are doing. It's really just a basic, enjoyable video, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed those videos when I saw them the first time because I love those kinds of performance videos. And you know what? Those ones were pretty much, I'm not going to say 100% accurate, but they were pretty damn close. I mean,
yeah.
Being a musician and playing and stuff like that, I can kind of tell when they're kind of off the mark or when they are on it.
Mm.
And it was pretty spot on in a lot of ways, that whole performance. And of course, this also gets back to something else that we were talking about earlier, is videos that are dated. Now, while this one is a little bit more dated in the fashion sense, especially those glasses and Alan's fashionable headband that he's wearing there, it does date it a bit. But you know what? It doesn't bother me in the slightest because this is just them performing. And, you know, I don't think they're trying to look like, you know, Bon Jovi or something, you know, like very, you know, sex symbolish or something like that. They were just being them and performing live on a soundstage.
Yeah, and really good. And going back perhaps to the basics of what the band was all about, even though they had those two new members from Buggles at the time. Okay, well, let's go on to my videos. Madrigal. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't understand why this exists. You know, it was just a... not a filler, I won't call it that, but it wasn't the longest, the most interesting perhaps. Oh, it is interesting, but maybe not the most interesting song on the album. And it wasn't a B-side, it wasn't an A-side of a single. I don't understand why they made it.
Yeah, it is quite a confusing thing, isn't it? Because usually when people, when record labels go and agree to make a video or fund a video, they do it for those kind of reasons. It's a single, or there's some kind of purpose behind the making of it to help push something. And there just doesn't seem to be any kind of connection like that to this song. It just almost seems like they just wanted to make a quick video and maybe, you know, only John or Rick Wakeman was available or something. Like, you know, it almost seems like there was some other motive behind it to make it. But what that is, I have no idea. Because like you said, it's a very... odd video. Yeah. It's not like they were expecting, like, you know, I would always expect something like this. like a boardroom somewhere in the, you know, in the Atlantic offices saying, yeah, I have a great idea. Why don't we make a video for Madrigal? And if we put this out, I guarantee you it's gonna skyrocket up the charts and we're going to have a real double platinum winner on our hands.
Goodness me. Can you imagine? And, you know, because Don't Kill the Whale, which we'll come back to in a moment, was the single. And on the other side was Release. I don't know. Maybe the idea was originally to have Madrigal on the other side. And I do hope somebody out there does know the real story, because I'd love to know what that was. But just thinking about the style of that, in a funny sort of way, I quite like the Madrigal video because, it uses some pretty clunky-looking video effects because it was 1980. But I quite like the way Rick does it completely deadpan. He comes in and he does his little piece and goes out again. And he doesn't ham it up. You know, it's well done from that point of view, I think.
Yeah. I mean, knowing how Rick Wakeman is, he could have really, he could have really gone to town with comedy end of this. But it's good to see that he kind of took this seriously and tried to make it into a video that wouldn't be one of those albatrosses around their neck in future years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not terrible. It's not the worst video I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, like we said, it's just a confusing one in the sense of why was this even made?
Yeah. And I just wonder if it was ever seen before it appeared on the compilation. So the cassette, the video cassette that came out, Greatest Video Hits, and then the DVD later. I don't know if anybody had seen it before then, but if you did, and if you know what this is all about, then please do let us know on the show notes for this episode. So then I went forward in time to Hold On. So, Mark, do you like 9012 Live?
Yeah, actually, I think 9012 Live is one of my more watched Yes videos that I have, actually, because I have the DVD that came out for it. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy watching the actual documentary of it that was done as well. So I also like the fact that they released later on a dual version of it. One has all the effects, like those special effects that were tied in during the concert. And there's another version of it that has those pretty much scrapped from it. And it's just the live performance. And I tend to find that I watch that end of it a little bit more because, I mean, the effects are not bad or anything, but it does get a little distracting sometimes.
I do remember really liking those effects, but, you know, it was early 80s, and those effects were quite remarkable for the time. They were quite groundbreaking in a way. And the video was, as I said in my piece, you know, the debut video from Soderbergh. What's his first name?
Steven.
And I think he did a brilliant job. I think the direction of that live concert is fantastic. And interesting, it was in Canada. So you watch Yes in Canada quite often then.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in Edmonton. And I think if we watch the documentary part, John Anderson says that that's probably one of the first spots that Yes played. And I think it's probably one of the first places that they actually kind of broke in Canada was in Edmonton, which is very strange because it's a very northerly part of that province in Alberta.
Right.
I mean, you know, and especially, God forbid that you go there in the wintertime to tour. I mean, you could freeze to death. It's that cold over there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that they chose to film there.
Yeah. I think it works extremely well. And what I love, and as I said earlier, but if you ever want to see, I think, Squire at the peak of his fun-loving, mischievous antics on stage, I think you could do a lot worse than watch 9012 Live, particularly his interaction with Rabin. They had a real musical connection, even if they didn't have it offstage, I'm not sure, but the way they worked together live on that video, I just think is incredible. The little duels that they have, and there's a point at which Squire starts playing that he's pushing Rabin towards the front of the stage to try and push him off into the crowd and things. It's amazing. It's remarkable that relationship that they clearly had.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very evident that they're having a lot of fun. And I mean, why wouldn't they? They had a huge record at that time. They were doing huge tours. They had money coming in left, right, and center. I mean, it was a total rebirth of Yes. I mean, think about it. A few months before that was happening, they were sort of up in the air that anything was going to actually happen with Yes. So could you imagine going from, you know, sitting in your sofa at home saying, what am I going to do now, to having a multi-platinum record, lots of money again, traveling by airplane, your own plane, you know? I mean, I would be smiling on stage every single night too.
Absolutely right. And you can see the enjoyment of every member of the band. And I think it's, again, some of a very different style, perhaps, of Alan White's drumming, but I think it's some of his best drumming for the situation that I've ever seen. All right, then, let's finally go on to Don't Kill the Whale. It's a bit underplayed, this one, frankly. There's not much to it. And when you have the ingenuity and the creativity of something like even Madrigal, and you see this one, it's really just the band standing there, being filmed, and then the waves and the sea superimposed over the top. So it's all right, but it's certainly memorable that you can see the band almost disappearing under the waves. But it's not a particularly exciting video.
No, but I mean, at least this one makes sense. I mean, you know, the whole water and everything, and, you know, Don't Kill the Whale. I mean, I'm sure even the most rudimentary watcher of videos can say, okay, I'm putting two and two together here. I know what they're trying to tell me, you know, in this video. So, you know, again, Yes, we're never a band that took videos, I think, all that seriously until much later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When they realized that their records could sell big, and hey, if we make a decent enough video, it might even sell a lot more. So I think that kind of clued into them around 90125 and, you know, Big Generator as well. I think that kind of clued in because, you know, you had The Rhythm of Love and you had Love Will Find a Way. Those were two pretty popular videos, at least here in Canada, you know? So, you know, I think that's the whole thing. There was a difference in importance to the band, to the management, I think, and even to the record label. I mean, they think to themselves, okay, we have $100,000 of money available here to give a couple of bands to do some decent videos. Who are we going to give it to? I don't think the first thing that pops into their head is Yes.
No.
You know? No. It's probably like some other band that's, you know, selling a lot, you know, at that time.
Yeah. I'm sure you're right. And one of the other thing that occurs to me is that the ones we've talked about today and most of the videos, if I can think in my head about what we've got in the whole collection, which is, as you said, not very large at all, most of them were done for albums which don't have Roger Dean imagery. And what you would expect is to see lots of Yes promotional videos with fantastical Roger Dean worlds, you know, spinning through. And there aren't really any.
You know what? I never clued into that. That's a really interesting point that you made up there, or you brought up, I meant. That I never realized that all these videos were done with records that were not Roger Dean album covered.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Because, I mean, think about it, Wondrous Stories as well, going for the one. There's no Roger Dean cover there, you know? Wow, that almost just blew my mind there for a second.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much the visual identity of the band, and there's nothing more visual than a video, and yet we don't have it. Even Yes Songs doesn't really have Dean imagery in the background there. They've got the sort of natural imagery, haven't they, of the microbes and all those sorts of things going on in there. But Roger Dean videos, not so much. Maybe that's something they could look forward to doing in the future. Very interesting. Okay, well, if you have views on that, then please do add them to the show notes. Should Roger Dean have been involved a lot more with it? And if you think back, Roger Dean, Martin Dean stage sets, there was surely some mileage there as well. Interesting, that. I've just taken me off in a different direction. Brilliant. Okay, well, as I say, add your thoughts on Yes promotional videos to the show notes for this week. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Hello, this is Patrick Moraz, and you are listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Just before we go, here's half the patrons. The Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And, as I say, half the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, Dave Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian M.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. As always, many thanks to Robert and David. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week with another of our fabulous interviews. But in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.